a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. A good time to call. Carlos is just sitting out there. He'd love to hear from you. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Our next listener, Ton, says they need to replace some bushes and a tree that the winter killed. Is buying now while the stock is good and planting in the fall going to be okay, or should they plant now? What are your suggestions?
You get those in the ground. If you try to over summer, it's not really over winter. If you try to,
you're over summering it.
Over summering to plant in the fall. I wouldn't, just because if you miss one irrigation, those plants will scorch. And you, when you plant and water a couple times a week, if you're a day late, once those are in the ground, they're going to be a lot more forgiving than if you're a day late in a pot, because they will need to be watered daily and you forget about it and you're had.
Yeah, I know. I still have a few little petunias that I haven't planted in there, the little teeny containers, and if you don't water those a day, they're dead. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
They definitely are. I mean, our next topic for the 9 o'clock hour is maintaining baskets through the summer. But it's when you have anything in artificial soil in a container above ground, it is regular maintenance to keep them going.
All right. Next person says they're curious if it's too late to plant green beans.
No, it's not. You can plant green beans. The spider mites are coming out, I've noticed a little bit, but as long as you keep an eye out for a few little pests, it's fine to still plant.
All right. Next person says that they used Bonide fruit tree spray 2 times last year, according to the instructions. They say they still have very wormy pears. They want to know if they should be using it more than 2 times.
They need to subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates, because they will give them the spray dates that they could spray 2 to 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that their timing was just off, because the instructions on those will say to spray every, I think, 7 or 14 days, and then you're limited to 2, 3, or 4 sprays a year. And so you may have to rotate it with something so that you can get more life out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the timing was probably wrong. Coddling moth, there's a minimum of 2 sprays if you know when to time them, but you need to use the pest lab updates, because it's not just a couple of weeks apart. It's going to be closer to a month or so apart. And now we're up to 3 generations of coddling moth annually, and so there would be a 3rd spray.
My mom has a pear tree in her yard, and I've noticed that the pears are always very small. Is that because of the variety of the tree, or is there something that causes pears not to get large?
Well, it could be the variety. There are a few pears out there that are only 2 inches or so long, and they're kind of a sweet little – people sometimes grow them for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the pears are probably not thinned. And so,
well, that's definitely the case.
What will happen is you'll have more fruit and they're smaller, but if you thin them, that's when you can get the grocery store sized pears.
Okay. Tammy is on the line in Suncrest. Good morning, Tammy. What is your question?
Hi. I was just wondering what you can do to get rid of cicada bugs. I think that's how you say it.
Are they harming your plants or more of a nuisance, or?
Well, I don't know that they're harming anything yet, but they're a nuisance, and we have a tree, an oak tree, that's only like 2 years old, and they're just loaded in that tree.
Well, the cicadas are a cyclical pest. A lot of the species come out about every 17 years, and so they'll lay eggs, and the larvae stay in the soil for that long. They come out, and feed for a while and then mate, lay eggs, and then they're done. But they're on a multi-year cycle. And so if they're causing a lot of problems, you could maybe try like a horticultural soap because they're in the tree feeding to try to knock them out of the tree that way. A general insecticide would probably work, but I would start with a horticultural soap.
Okay, and I can get that like
art
or like
a
IFA.
Yes, the major brand is Safer, S-A-F-E-R, but there's others out there. So Home Depot, Lowe's, IFA. I like to support the local businesses. Oftentimes, you can get a little bit more help from the employees.
Okay, and they don't bite, do they?
No. No, they just make the clicking noises. When I lived in the South for a while, every summer there would be species of those, and they would just make a racket all night long, but it was something you got used to. In fact, a lot of the older movies you hear, the jungle noise would be a mix of recorded cicadas with peacocks. But,
okay, so that's why we didn't see them last year.
Correct.
They don't come every year. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, then I'll try that.
All right, Tammy, good luck with that. Tommy,
thank you.
You bet. Ton, every time I hear you talk about horticultural soap, I think about the very first time I went to buy horticulture soap. And that's because when you think of soap, you don't think of something that comes in a spray bottle.
No.
I mean, I'm thinking, how do you use soap on a plant?
They call it that because the chemistry is somewhat similar to dish soap and other soaps. There's some sort of clarified soapy fatty acids in there. And it's not something you wash your hands with, but the end result of what it does is that when you spray it on an insect, it breaks down the oils on their layer and it desiccates them. Mm-hmm. And so they die. And so it's a contact-only spray, and it'll minimize damage to other insects. And if they needed to step it up to something like a permethrin or Tempo or something, they probably could. But I would start with that horticultural soap just because it's a lot safer for people and the environment and beneficial insects.
And most of the time it's pretty effective. And what is it most effective against?
The piercing, sucking, soft-bodied insects, but even box elder bugs, if you get it on them, it'll kill them. Hmm. And so about anything you can spray it on, but it has to come into direct contact and be sprayed on top of whatever you're going after because there's zero residual. And in this case, that's what we're going for, just because then once it's dry, it won't be toxic to any other insects.
Yeah, but you're not really washing the plant.
You are not.
Which is what the image that it kind of conjures up. Next person says, what is the best way to thin pears and apples, and how many fruit is best per branch?
So when they're dime-sized, and you want one fruit for every 6 inches to foot of branch. So pears, apples, and peaches, that's the rule.
One per 6 inches?
Yes, to foot.
Okay.
So what will happen with apples is you'll get a cluster of apples, and there will be four or five, and you look at the apples and there will be one of them that's slightly bigger, and that's called the king apple or the king bloom. You thin the smaller ones out and just do that on the clusters, and that will generally get you one apple per 6 inches.
I'm going to be honest, it is so hard for me to thin fruit because I just feel like I could have had all of this nice fruit.
Yeah, and so this is the advantage to dwarf rootstock. And so if you have, my favorite apple is Golden Delicious. Mm-hmm. And if you have a Golden Delicious on a rootstock that lets it get 30 feet tall, and especially if it hasn't been pruned, you're not thinning that. You know, it's just not going to be practical. But if you have one that is 8 to 12 feet off the ground and you just need a step stool or a small ladder, it takes less time than you would think. But that's going to be more practical than something that's giant. And mm-hmm. so even the true dwarfing rootstocks that don't allow the trees to get higher than 6 or 8 feet, they have to be staked for life. But especially in these smaller yards, those are going to be easier to maintain than a larger tree.
Our next listener says, when should fall peas be planted?
Fall peas. Man, I've got to get out my calculator. It's usually sometime mid-August.
Your calendar, you mean?
My calendar. It's
you're not going to do math on a Saturday morning.
No,
right?
The caffeine hasn't kicked in yet. So,
okay. So you're going to check that.
Yeah, mid-late August. I'll check the timing to make sure. You know, for the timing of these plantings, the Davis County Extension Office, Sean Olson, who retired a few years ago put together a very handy when do I plant fact sheet. And so if you just Google USU garden plant dates, fact sheet will come right up. And you will get a list of when you can plant anything we'd grow.
Didn't we post that earlier in the season?
We posted it a few times.
It's a good one, though.
It is.
Because, yeah, people are always wondering. I'm always wondering. You know, you'd think you'd remember, but I forget certain things. Like when I'm going to take those bulbs that, you know, bloom in the at Christmas time, when do I take those out? I'm always messing that up.
Yeah, it's there would be useful calendars for other things. You know, the amaryllis would be some time to time it for Christmas. What I like to do is I know it's going to take probably 60 or so days for those to re-leaf and then form a flower. And so I go from Christmas and it's November 25th, then from there or October 25th, but then you've got to get it going. So late summer and you hope for the best.
You know what I've started doing is putting a reminder in my phone. Because otherwise, I forget all about them. They're, you know, I've got them hidden away and I forget about them.
Yeah, my grandfather grew those and he would just do his best with them. And oftentimes, he would have March amaryllis and February amaryllis.
Which is nice, too. You know, sometimes it's nice to have them when other things aren't blooming, right? Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Good time to call. And the number to text us, 57500. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you. We're taking your calls, 801-575-8255, and you can text us at 57500. Next listener, Anton, says, does salt work to kill weeds on rock beds?
I'm glad they're asking, and I see this posted quite a bit. People have these homebrew weed recipes, weed killer recipes, assuming that they're somehow safer than what we're spraying. Mm-hmm. And if you want to ruin your soil over time, especially, mix up some salt and vinegar and some water and dish soap or whatever else, and just keep applying that for a few years. And if you have a clay soil, you will reap the rewards to where about the only crop you're going to be growing is spinach and other super salt tolerant crops. And so once every few years isn't going to hurt much, but I see people, I pour salt in the cracks of my driveway. You know, not going to leach as much, but not great for the soil. But I just find it interesting when people assume that somehow that spray is somehow safer for the environment than something like glyphosate. And it feels good, but when you look at the science, it doesn't check out.
Okay, now they're just talking about rock beds, though.
I still wouldn't do it. If you get water in there, it's going to leach. And it's one of those that if the rock is thick enough, I would rather see them using a weed torch once a month. It looks like they might be trying to avoid harsher chemicals, but something like Ortho's Ground Clear, as long as you don't have tree roots and shrub roots growing underneath the area. And it's just salt is not an acceptable weed killer in most situations.
All right. Ralph is calling from South Weber. Good morning, Ralph. What is your question?
Yeah, my question is this. I have raised beds. I've had my soil tested by Utah State. And I have plenty of phosphorus and potassium in my soil. And my question is, my tomatoes, they're in the ground. And they've got flowers on them. But they're just not going up. And I don't know what to do.
When you say they're not growing up, there's been a lot of tomatoes this year. You know, Dave and I had this conversation last week that tomatoes seem to be struggling a little bit more in a lot of situations this year. Now, have you been using USU's fact sheet on the tomatoes? Because I believe at the period of 4 and 8 weeks, and I need to review it again, that it's saying like a half teaspoon of fertilizer at some point. Now, Are you in, are your raised beds, did you use your native sandy soil, or what kind of soil do you have?
I had clay. And what I had to do is I got drainage all into my garden, so I took a French drain about 10 feet long and about 5 feet deep to stop the water to get into my garden. But they're nice and green and everything, but I see neighbors' tomatoes going, growing up.
What soil did you use in the raised beds? I mean, the tag here on the call says tomatoes has raised beds, soil analyzed, tomatoes aren't going. So I'm assuming they're in raised beds, yeah. And if they are, what kind of mix did you use in the raised beds?
Well, I had mostly mulch, but what I've done is I've got a friend of mine that has a great topsoil, so I took his topsoil and have ground it into the. What happens is the water seeps down, and then it there's such a hard clay base, about 2 to 3 feet down, though it doesn't allow the water to escape.
Well, if it's that low, how tall are your raised beds?
They're only about 8 inches. No, seven, eight. No. 2x6, but I dug down quite a ways, like a couple feet, 2 or 3 feet.
Okay. If you took a shovel and dug down a foot to 18 inches, would you hit standing water?
I could.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and it sounds like there may be some drainage issues, but if you mixed a lot of compost with some topsoil, did you look at the salinity on the test and see what its measure was?
I was okay there.
Okay. Well, high P and K is just common for Utah soil. And When I see, even if it says very high, it's usually not a problem. And that can be a little deceptive on those tests. And so I'm still trying to figure out what's going on. If you're 6 to 8 inches above or 6 inches above the soil surface and you dug down that far, unless you're having drainage issues and you have that water or that soil just waterlogged all the time, drainage to 2 to 3 feet should be sufficient to grow tomatoes.
Yeah. So I can, for instance, water my tomatoes once a week or once a week and a half.
Yeah.
And they just... Is that okay?
Yeah, if the soil's so moist, yes. One of my colleagues that retired a few years ago has some of the gummiest clay I've ever seen, and he only waters every 3 to 4 weeks and grows a great garden. And so I think There might be something else going on. One thing I would do is, one more question. What was the texture of the soil?
Oh, it's really good.
On the test, what did the texture say?
Loam.
Okay.
Yeah, loam.
So you're having other issues. If it could be the drainage, but if you've got a loamy soil and it is in those beds, I don't know that the soil itself is the problem, and it could be drainage, but Just looking at everything, in those raised beds, I don't like using native soil unless it's sandy. And what I will do is mix it 1-to-1 with compost and then put triple 16 over the top of it. And I want those raised beds closer to a foot tall. And what you've done should be sufficient. But if you're having problems, maybe try extending the height of them. South Weber does have sandbars coming in through Riverdale. Or some of the gravel pits on the Layton bench will sell sandy soil. And I would get some of that sand, raise it up, mix it one-to-one with compost, and then just mix a couple inches of compost in every fall after you're done and put triple 16 in there every year and see if that helps.
And put some sand into it?
Well, you'd almost need to sometimes – Ben, we're running short on time, and this is a lot more in-depth question. What I'm going to have you do is email Sheridan Hansen or call the Davis County Extension Office. Sheridan deals with raised beds a lot, and you might be able to bring in some of the soil to their diagnostic clinic with your soil test, picture this of the tomatoes, but take it into our diagnostic clinic because I don't know that we're going to get anywhere because I just don't have enough information.
So do I – one other quick question. Do I put – I want to fertilize my tomatoes today. How much nitrogen
download the USU fact sheet and just Google USU and tomatoes in the garden, download it, and it'll give you the timing of when you need to fertilize.
Okay.
Ralph, thanks so much for your call this morning. We didn't take a break for the top of the hour news. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent. It was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.